somebody shorted the oil market by hundreds of millions of dollars exactly 20 minutes before Trump made his announcement. And if you see that once, it could be a coincidence. But that's happened at least three times, if not more, since the war began. That's a pattern. And what that suggests is that there's rampant corruption and insider self-dealing going on.
What? At Trump's White House? What next? Gambling in Casablanca?
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling there's something right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yes, I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the public airwaves and the internets around the country and the world. Blanketing planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. A lot to get to, but let's start here. Voters headed to the polls on Tuesday in the great Commonwealth of Virginia to ring in on the plan by Democratic legislators there to temporarily redraw Virginia's U.S. House maps in a way that would help flip as many as four currently Republican-held seats to Democratic in this November's midterm elections. The sort of complicated scheme here to now ask voters to set aside the existing U.S. House map drawn up by the state's constitutional amendment, drawn up by an independent redistricting commission. This is in response, as you know, to Donald Trump's orders to states controlled by Republicans to change their House maps to try and steal seats in Democratic districts this November to hold on to a House majority next year rather than, you know, change their actual unpopular policies to ones that voters might like.
And of course, targeting primarily districts that represent minorities.
Of course.
Because that's what Republicans like to do.
And so this is all sort of the last step of a complicated scheme that Democrats have done in Virginia to bring this before voters. All of these other cases with Republicans were, you know, just the legislators doing it. This is going before voters again. And some of you who are hearing today's show on Wednesday morning, you may already know if yes to redraw the maps has passed or not. But please, no spoilers. We will cover whatever happens on tomorrow's broadcast following a campaign with a ton of money spent on both sides of this thing. Reports of voter confusion on this constitutional amendment in this special election. Much of that done on purpose, by the way, confusion by Republican opponents of the measure, even as early turnout was reportedly much higher than expected. Whether that high turnout is ultimately a good or a bad thing for proponents of this initiative, well, we will find out and discuss that on tomorrow's program. Beyond that, and especially before we get to war news and then our guest on a fascinating, if wildly disturbing topic, let's begin with a little bit of reality-based news, shall we, before diving at least briefly into whatever nonsense our sundowning U.S. president is doing or claiming in regard to his stupid, deadly, dangerous, world economy-threatening Iran war that he continues to carry out. So that, you know, we won't talk about the serious allegations from the Epstein files suggesting that Trump may have raped a 13-year-old girl some years ago. Anyway, this is a bit of good news and in time for Earth Day. It didn't come out in time, however, for today's Green News Report, where every day is Earth Day.
True.
That's also coming up a little bit later this hour with Desi Doyen. But a federal judge on Tuesday blocked the Trump administration from enforcing a series of permitting policies that wind and solar energy industry groups say have stymied the development of new energy generation projects. In another quick case here of the lower court sort of saving us all from the worst idiotic excesses of this administration. As Reuters reports today, Chief U.S. District Judge Denise Casper in Boston issued a preliminary injunction sought by 9 advocacy groups and industry trade associations that argued the administration had imposed unlawful roadblocks that have halted the development of wind and solar energy projects nationwide. All of that at a moment when energy prices are skyrocketing, first due to the proliferation of AI data centers, and then in response to Trump's ridiculous war on Iran, all on the heels of Trump promising over and over again that he would cut energy prices by half in his first year in office, but I guess he was just lying for a change. The judge in this case said that the plaintiffs challenging the administration were likely to succeed in showing that the U.S. Department of Interior and other agencies adopted a series of unlawful policies that had led to renewable energy developers canceling or delaying numerous wind and solar projects nationwide. The plaintiffs in this case include groups like Renew Northeast and Alliance for Clean Energy New York. Quote, according to the groups in a joint statement, this is an undeniable victory for members of our coalition and the broader clean energy industry, as well as American households and businesses, they said. The ruling was the latest in a series of judicial rebukes to the Trump administration's efforts to block approvals for wind energy projects or stop work altogether on multi-billion dollar offshore wind farms under construction on the East Coast. The Republican president has sought to boost government support for fossil fuels, which, okay, he's a Republican, of course. He's owned by the fossil fuel industry, but at the same time, killing the development of cleaner, cheaper, renewable energy? Well, that's where the good guys won on Tuesday in court. Making matters more ridiculous, Trump on Monday invoked the Defense Production Act as he signed a series of energy-related presidential memorandums aimed at further boosting production of oil and coal and natural gas, citing the need for, quote, defense readiness.
You know, this is just dumb on so many, many, many levels. But yep. One of the stupidest ones is that wind energy and solar energy yeah. are faster and much cheaper to build. You know, you have a huge delay in building natural gas plants right now because of a backlog on the supply chain. That's going to take like 3 to 5 years to build a new gas plant, mm-hmm. whereas you can get a wind and solar plant on up and running within a year. And for cheaper, too.
And we should note that, you know, and when he's claiming this is for defense readiness, that, you know, this is for a Defense Department, which had for years led the way in many aspects of renewable energy innovation, development, deployment, and so forth, at least until, you know, Trump ordered those projects to be killed at the Defense Department to kill any and all such initiatives at the Pentagon. And also, as plaintiffs argue in this case, in the regular old commercial development of cleaner, cheaper energy resources through this apparently unlawful scheme at a time that the nation and the world really need these energy resources. Groups supporting wind and solar power sued in December, seeking to block government actions that they said placed wind and solar tech into one of their what one of their lawyers described as a, quote, regulatory second-class status. Those actions included a policy that the Interior Department adopted in July that requires nearly every step in the wind and solar permitting process to receive approval from 3 senior political appointees, including the Interior Secretary Doug Burgum. That jerk. So you want to build a wind or a solar farm? Well, get in line, because you got to get approval from 3 different corporate buddies of Trump in the fossil fuel industry, including his Interior Secretary Burgum, who can simply just ignore or decline any of these permits as they wish, or at least that's what they were doing before this lawsuit, and this court stepped in for this excellent ruling on Tuesday. The Interior Department's memorandum setting up that scheme cited directives and orders that Trump had signed, aiming at blocking offshore wind, directing the Interior Department to eliminate, quote, preferences for, quote, expensive and unreliable energy sources like wind and solar. Expensive and unreliable, Desi.
So stupid.
Who knew? Judge Casper, who was appointed by President Barack Obama, agreed that this was stupid, saying none and unlawful, saying none of the directives that the department cited explained or justified this three-tiered review process. So there's a bit of good news for your Earth Day week.
I'll take it.
And before we get to our guest today, after repeatedly claiming that he would not extend the ceasefire with Iran after its initial expiration date on Wednesday, that the U.S. military was, quote, raring to go, said Trump, if negotiations were not successful, and that he would restart bombing, including, as he vowed yet again this week, of every power plant and bridge in the nation of Iran. And that as recently as Tuesday morning said that Iran had repeatedly violated the ceasefire numerous times. Well, you will be shocked to learn that after all of that, Trump tacoed again and over the past hour or so announced that he would not be attacking Iran after the ceasefire ends, despite the lack of a new agreement with them, and that instead he would be extending the ceasefire with Iran indefinitely. I bet some insiders made a whole lot of money on that today on the Poly Market and the Kalshi betting exchanges. But we'll get to that in a moment. All of that on the heels of the U.S. arguably violating the ceasefire themselves. Once again, as Iran claims that the U.S. blockade of Iranian ports is a violation of the agreement, and that they describe and what they describe as U.S. piracy on the high seas following a weekend attack and takeover of an Iranian cargo ship by the U.S. Navy. And on Tuesday, as AP reports, U.S. forces boarded an oil tanker previously sanctioned for smuggling Iranian crude oil in Asia. The Pentagon said on Tuesday, as it puts into place a global warning to track down vessels that are tied to Tehran. U.S. forces, quote, conducted a right of visit maritime interdiction of the tanker named Tiffany, quote, without incident, the Pentagon said on social media.
At least they didn't fire on the oil tanker.
The oil tanker, I know. The tanker was captured in the Bay of Bengal between India and Southeast Asia, and it was carrying Iranian oil, according to a U.S. defense official who spoke on condition of anonymity. The military will decide in the next 4 days what to do with that vessel, what I would describe now as a stolen vessel, and the oil inside of it. It could be towed back to the U.S., turned over to another country, according to an official speaking to AP. It's the latest move by the U.S. to stop any ship tied to Iran or those suspected of carrying supplies that could help its government, from weapons and oil to metals and electronics. The tanker was seized before Trump announced that the U.S. was extending the tenuous ceasefire in the war, supposedly at mediator Pakistan's request. But that he would be keeping the blockade in place. Pakistani leaders, including its prime minister, reportedly worked intensively late on Tuesday to get both sides to agree to a second round of ceasefire talks. An Iranian foreign ministry spokesperson told Iran State TV that there has been, quote, no final decision on whether to agree to more talks because of, quote, unacceptable actions by the U.S., apparently referencing the blockade in the Strait of Hormuz. As Vice President J.D. Vance put on hold a trip to Islamabad, Pakistan's capital, Trump's special envoy, Steve Witkoff, his real estate friend, and his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, who who is paid billions of dollars by Saudi Arabia
and who has no
and others in the region
and who has no formal role in the federal government.
They were expected in Washington on Tuesday for consultations about how to proceed here. That, according to a U.S. official, in other words, these guys have no idea what they are now doing. But Trump would really, really like to get the price of oil back down if he could and keep the stock market moving up in advance of the midterm elections. Other than that, they are just making it up as they go. Before announcing the ceasefire extension, Trump had warned that, quote, lots of bombs will, quote, start going off if there's no agreement before the Wednesday deadline. Oh, well. While Iran's chief negotiator said that Tehran has, quote, new cards on the battlefield that have yet to be revealed. Okay. Who should we believe? A senior commander in Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard threatened to destroy the region's oil industry if war with the U.S. resumes. He told an Iranian news site, quote, if southern neighbors allow the enemy to use their facilities to attack Iran, they should say goodbye to oil production in the Middle Eastern region. I gotta say, I kind of believe them. They are, after all, in an existential battle here. All Donald Trump was hoping to do was distract from the Epstein files, and he accidentally found himself crashing the global economy. Since the war started, at least 3,375 people have been killed in Iran, another nearly 2,300 in Lebanon. Additionally, 23 people have died in Israel, more than a dozen in Gulf Arab states, 15 Israeli soldiers in Lebanon, and 13 U.S. service members throughout the region have been killed, and more than 400 U.S. troops have been wounded in the fighting to date, according to numbers released by the Pentagon on Monday. So, as noted, I'm guessing a few insiders may have made a whole lot of money on Trump's latest about-face regarding his threats to restart fighting in Iran at the end of the agreed-upon end date for the ceasefire. But, yeah, that sort of insider trading on wars is becoming a trend during this war and really during the second administration overall, as a few apparent Trump friends or folks in the White House or even the Pentagon seem to be cashing in on war news at betting sites like Kalshi and Polymarket, knowing that they're unlikely to be cracked down upon by the administration, because why would they? Trump's own son, Don Jr., works for both of those now billion-dollar betting companies. So what can be done about any of that? Well, hang on. Public Citizen's Craig Holman is here. He joins us next. And as usual, he's got a few good ideas. Well, a few ideas anyway. We'll see how good they are. Also, Green News Report, Earth Day edition, also coming up today. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to The Bradcast.
The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Don't talk about the weather.
Shh. It's a military secret.
Just keep your wits together.
Shh. That's the safest way to keep it.
These are critical times. Be careful of espionage.
In such critical times, you've got to watch out for sabotage.
Welcome back. It's the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. All right, a few weeks ago, we told you about a group of seemingly brand new accounts on the prediction marketplace app called Polymarket that made highly specific, very well-timed bets on whether the U.S. and Iran would reach a ceasefire, specifically on April 7, resulting in hundreds of thousands of dollars in profits for these brand new customer accounts. As I quipped at the time, it was as if they knew about it in advance or something. At least 50 accounts, or wallets as they are known, placed substantial yes bets just before Trump announced the ceasefire in a Truth Social posting at around 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And these bets were the first bets ever made on the system by these particular wallet accounts, suggesting quite a lucrative string of beginner's luck. One of these wallets, for example, created Tuesday around 10 a.m. Eastern Time, placed roughly $72,000 in bets at an average price of 8.8 cents. The buy-in for each betting event ranges from $0 to $1 each, reflecting essentially 0 to 100% chance of whatever users think will happen. This Polymarket user then cashed out when it actually did happen, as he or she or they betted, for a cool profit of $200,000. But that certainly wasn't the first time that something exactly like that had happened in regard to the U.S.-Israeli war on Iran. As The Guardian reported over this past weekend, 16 bets made $100,000 each by accurately predicting the timing of the initial U.S. airstrikes against Iran back on February 27. Later, a single user with the username MAGAMYMAN would make over $550,000 after betting that the Ayatollah would topple just moments before his assassination by Israeli forces. He or she or they placed that bet roughly 71 minutes before news of the joint U.S.-Israeli strikes became public. How lucky. On April 7, right before Donald Trump announced the temporary ceasefire with Iran, traders bet $950 million that oil prices would come down, and lo and behold, they did. These bets and other well-timed wagers accurately predicted the precise timing of major developments in the U.S.-Israel war with Iran, creating huge windfalls and raising concerns among lawmakers and experts over potential insider trading on these pretty much entirely unregulated marketplaces, or more accurately, gambling parlors. And while I'm not bothered in the least by people who want to gamble, I am troubled that they seem to be able to do it with insider knowledge, which, especially when it comes to war and peace and assassinations, is raising a very troubling matter for those who give a damn, which does not appear to be the Trump administration itself, which is making these decisions on which unidentified insiders are winning millions of dollars, and on which, by the way, Donald Trump's own son, Don Jr., serves as a paid advisor to the two most well-known such so-called prediction marketplace apps, Polymarket and Kalshi. In fact, The Guardian is reporting the traders placed over $1 billion in, quote, perfectly timed bets over these platforms, hinging on developments in the Iran-U.S. war, earning massive windfalls and sparking very well-earned suspicions of insider trading. The proliferation of online betting markets like Polymarket and Kalshi has allowed bets on virtually any news event. It's also easier than ever to buy commodity derivatives like oil futures, where traders gamble on what the price of oil will be in the future. Leaders of some U.S. federal agencies and some members of Congress said that they want to crack down on suspicious trading taking place across different marketplaces, but it is unclear how much headway regulators, particularly in an administration where the son of the president is actually paid by the companies that run the marketplaces themselves, will make to actually try and regulate here, try at all. Last month, the good government nonprofit watchdog group Public Citizen sent a letter to the chair of the U.S. Commodity Futures Trading Commission, or CFTC, seeking an investigation of what they describe as the highly suspicious bets placed on the outcome of the American-Israeli military assault on Iran and the death of its supreme leader. The letter poses questions about the connection between the political gambling and the military attacks on Iran, such as who placed these accurate and very substantial bets on the prediction market platforms moments before the actual attacks on Iran occurred. Who, within the Trump or Netanyahu administrations, were privy to the timing and the goals of the American-Israeli attacks. And given that some government officials do indeed have access to reliable non-public information on likely outcomes of political events, does it make any sense at all to allow betting on such outcomes in the first place? And perhaps most disturbingly, the group asks CFTC Chair Michael Selig whether government officials might be manipulating public policies based on self-enrichment on prediction market platforms rather than based on the public interest. Quote, allowing prediction market platforms to be on virtually anything, anytime is a recipe for disaster, said Craig Holman, Public Citizens government affairs lobbyist, adding, quote, the American people should not have to wonder whether government officials are exploiting their access to classified information to make a quick buck. The CFTC, he says, must act swiftly to regulate platforms like Kalshi and Polymarket in order to protect the public. Oh, I'm sure they will, Craig. But rather than be snarky about his comments behind his back, allow me to do so directly to him. Joining us now is our friend Craig Holman, government affairs lobbyist at Public Citizen, where he has long served as the group's Capitol Hill lobbyist on matters concerning ethics, lobbying itself, and campaign finance reform. Oh, Mr. Holman, welcome back to the broadcast, sir.
Delighted to be here, Brad. Thanks for inviting me.
Always great to have you. Listen, before we get to what to do about any of this, this is actually a lot of insiders making me wonder if some of this, are perhaps maybe troops who receive orders the night before, for example, or I suppose there are, other insiders in the government who get such info in advance. The New York Times reports there were about 150 Polymarket accounts that placed bets on the initial strike on Iran in late February, totaling about 855,000. 16 of those accounts won more than $100,000 each. There's a lot of people who kind of have this sort of info before an event like this who could profit off of it, correct?
Well, it's grown in number. The prediction market industry has been around for a long time, and it used to just place bets essentially on the success or failure of companies. And it would get a lot of, rather small bets, hardly anything sizable, and not really timed perfectly. I mean, it was just a matter of luck. This is the first time we're seeing very, very large bets being placed and timed perfectly. Yes. With the political events. So we're talking about not only the size of the bets, we're talking about the timing, which immediately raises the appearance and suspicion of insider trading. Mm-hmm. When we're talking about the number of bets being placed, it really isn't that many compared to how many people altogether have access to the prediction market industry. Especially these suspicious activities started with our invasion of Venezuela. Mm-hmm. There really were just a small handful of bets that predicted the correct time of the invasion of the U.S., and only one that actually predicted that Maduro was going to be captured. And that ended up paying about $436,000. Then it started growing with the Iran invasion. There were at least six suspects who had perfectly timed bets, winning about $1.2 million on the timing of the invasion. And then just one in particular who bet on the assassination of Khomeini. Usually when a country invades another country, they don't try assassinating the leadership of that country. So it's exceedingly unusual. One person, MAGA Meme Man, seemed to hit it right on the button, placing, as you noted, $87,000 down on the assassination of Khomeini and ended up winning more than half a million. So we're not talking about a whole lot of bettors.
No.
This seems to be like, a handful of people who have access to inside information. And you know, I can't believe it would be very many soldiers in the field placing these kind of bets, because how many soldiers can afford placing an $80,000 bet?
Right.
To me, it sounds a lot like someone within the Trump administration who knows exactly what's about to happen and, places a large bet. That's a sure thing.
And not only in the administration. I mean, these could be friends of Donald Trump. He talks to a lot of people down at Mar-a-Lago. Hey, we're going into Iran tomorrow. We're going into Venezuela tomorrow. He's not been known for, keeping his mouth shut. He could certainly talk to just a few of his friends about it. MAGA, my man, could have been one of them. And they certainly have that kind of money to make those sorts of bets, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. And, also connected to Trump's sons, Don Jr. I mean, he very likely had inside knowledge of what's going on, and he's got this type of money that he can place those types of bets.
He could be MAGA my man himself.
It's conceivable. We can't really know who these bettors are until the CFTC actually does a full-scale investigation. And we've got no indication that the CFTC is going to do so. As a matter of fact, I want to emphasize the CFTC has been basically rigged by the Trump administration not to proceed with an investigation and not to regulate the entire industry. It's a 5-member commission that runs the CFTC. The only one that has been appointed who's active is the chair, Michael Selig. And Michael Selig was an attorney for some of these companies that are profiting off the prediction market. He was appointed for the very reason to deregulate the industry. And so far, he doesn't appear to have enforced any of the rules against betting on things like war or even the assassination of foreign leaders.
Well, that's what I want to ask. Whether it's a U.S. troop, a friend of Donald Trump's, his own son, Trump himself, it could be him himself. Is there any actual laws here or regulations that would make any of this unlawful, even if the CFTC did bother to investigate?
The CFTC surprisingly does have a rule on the books, making it illegal to place bets on the prediction market when it comes to war or the assassination of foreign leaders.
And that's by anyone? You can't make that sort of a bet in theory in this regulation, or is it just insiders who can't?
It's by anyone.
Okay.
The problem is the CFTC hasn't really talked about it. They haven't educated anybody about it. And the prediction market industry didn't even know about it. So they were openly taking bets on those particular issues, both Kalsi and Polymarket and some of the other companies. And, when all these allegations of insider trading started breaking, then suddenly Kalsi and Polymarket started rethinking about this, and they realized there is a rule on the books against that type of trading and had to negotiate with some of the winners to try to reduce payoffs. And, they're just haven't succeeded. They paid off these types of bets. And, we're seeing the bets go on and on in a similar nature. Now, at this point, I just checked out the Kalsi site before our interview. And I noticed Kalsi, won't let people place a bet on the assassination of a leader saying that or saying the timing of an invasion. But you can say things like the leader is going to be thrown out of power.
Right.
Or something general without saying he's actually going to be assassinated. And you can place bets on that.
And it's not just these gambling apps like Kalsi and melancholy market. On March 23, the Financial Times reported that traders, regular old traders, I guess, placed $580 million in bets on the oils future market just 15 minutes before Trump said on social media that the U.S. was having, quote, productive talks with Iran. And the traders there made a windfall after those comments triggered a sell-off in the oil markets that made oil prices plummet, making a lot of those folks rich if they were not rich already. It's become easier and easier to trade on futures markets. It used to be quite complicated. Now you can also do it on your phone as if it was a, you know, a gambling app, really, like Polymarket. If there are not necessarily rules for or laws in place for these so-called prediction apps, what about for oil futures markets? They've been around for a long time. Are there laws there? And is that the CFTC or is that the SEC that would look into some sort of insider trading in those markets?
That would be the SEC in those markets, the CFTC on the prediction market industry. Mm-hmm. The problem with the insider trading laws, first of all, they're very difficult to enforce. And secondly, they have never really been explicitly applied to things like buying futures. And so that makes it, you know, sort of this legal gray area as to whether these bettors can be prosecuted for insider trading in those acts. Mm-hmm. Insider trading has always legally been defined in a very narrow sense of receiving some sort of corporate secrets and then trading on the corporate secrets. It's never really been applied in the sense of buying and trading off futures. So it's a gray area, and that's why legislation is needed to clarify this, especially for a CFTC who clearly has no interest in regulating this.
Yeah, you mentioned there's Michael Selig is the chair. He formerly worked with these markets. He was apparently appointed at the end of 2025. Where are all the other, if there's supposed to be five and there's supposed to be a bipartisan commission, where are all the other commissioners that are supposed to be on this panel? And I mean, and without them, is there any reason to believe that Selig on his own would order probes of any of this at all?
Well, I do want to point out, because of the sensational news about potential insider trading on war and the assassination of political leaders, mm-hmm. has forced Michael Selig into conducting rulemaking. Public comments are due on the rulemaking process at the end of April, April 30th. Public Citizen, of course, is submitting our own public comments on this. Mm-hmm. However, I don't know what Selig's going to do with this. I mean, you know, quite frankly, we've already submitted a complaint saying at least investigate what's going on. And as far as I know, there is no investigation happening. He may be forced into conducting rulemaking, but is that going to end up penalizing those who actually exercise insider trading? That all remains to be seen. I'm very doubtful. I want to point out part of the reason why, you know, Donald Trump specifically doesn't really want to see the CFTC be that active in trading the prediction, in monitoring the prediction market, is the prediction market works hand in hand with the cryptocurrency industry. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Donald Trump has really cashed in himself on cryptocurrency. And the last thing he wants to see is government regulation undermining his own profitability in crypto.
Of course. And as I understand it, his failing Trump media group is also now going to be getting into prediction markets themselves. So, of course, he doesn't want any oversight. But these other there's supposed to be five people in total, I guess, commissioners on the CFTC. There's only one right now, that Michael Selig. Where are the other four? Have they been nominated? Are they being held up in the Senate? Has Donald Trump not bothered to name them at all? And he'll just hold up this whole thing, because Selig actually, I guess a week or so, was in Congress regarding at least the futures market. I think he said, quote, "We will find you and we will and you will face the full force of law if you're suspected of insider trading." But then he said that the commission itself won't put any new regulations in place until it has five seated commissioners. So where are the other four, I guess?
This is all a contradiction. Trump has not nominated the other commissioners. The Senate is not considering confirming more commissioners at this point. It's just Michael Selig out there. And, you know, Michael Selig did say he's not going to do rulemaking till there is a full commission. Well, he's been forced into actually beginning the rulemaking process, as I noted earlier. So rulemaking, at least public comments on the rulemaking, are now being submitted to the CFTC. It may be a perfect excuse for Selig to wait on doing anything until there are the other commissioners appointed. And Trump hasn't indicated, hasn't shown any interest in doing that at this point.
What a shock.
We may actually have to wait till the midterm elections before someone is held accountable for all this activity.
Yeah, I imagine that Selig can, you know, have the public comment period for this rulemaking, act like he's putting these, preparing these regulations, but then say, well, we, you know, we're ready to go, but we do need a full commission before we can actually vote on putting those regulations in place. Now, it's reported that some states are also battling now with the CFTC. They charge that they should have oversight of these betting markets. They would be able to investigate these probes, in theory, at least in their own states. CFTC and the Trump administration disagree that they don't want the states involved in this at all. Do they have a legal leg to stand on there?
Well, that's what's going on here. Normally, a federal agency can establish dominance on the jurisdiction of something that crosses state boundaries. However, there are a number of states that actually steadfastly outlaw gambling altogether, and others that prohibit gambling on elections outcomes. And those states are actually taking action against Kalshi and Polymarket and the prediction market industry, trying to get their laws enforced. Unfortunately, just as another strong indication that Selig isn't going to do anything to regulate this industry, he has decided to try taking action against those states for doing that. So Selig wants to impose federal jurisdiction in this field, in which the federal government has no regulation at all over states that actually would make it illegal.
Right. It's bad enough he's not enforcing the law. He's preventing others from doing, in this case, states from doing so when they want to. Craig Holman, this all seems bad in that, you know, anyone could manipulate these markets. I mean, I could bet, for example, that bradblog.com is going to have a new redesign later this week because I am planning on doing it. So I could bet on that point anonymously. So that, you know, things like that seem to be a problem in and of themselves. But when it comes to public events, government functions, it's, you know, triply, quadruply troubling in that public announcements and policy decisions, including whether or not we go to war, could be made in order specifically for insiders to, you know, made and timed for insiders to cash in on it. I mean, it really is the wild, wild west. Is there something that I'm missing here?
No, it is. Not only the Wild West, I mean, some scholars like Paul Krugman call it treason. because this is actually revealing foreign policy secrets, non-public information affecting American foreign policy to whoever's watching the markets.
Yeah.
And you know full well, I mean, more and more people are realizing, hey, some insiders actually know what's going on. So let's watch the market. If an $87,000 bet gets placed, we'll follow suit right away. Not only other investors, but I imagine the Russians, the Chinese, the Iranians, they're all watching the market now.
Yeah.
And so Krugman would actually call this type of insider trading as an act of treason against the United States.
It makes sense. You know, it looks like Trump has just extended the ceasefire against or with Iran that he said he was not going to extend. And I suppose we haven't looked yet, but maybe in a few days we'll discover that, oh, you know, there was a whole bunch of bets made just before he made that decision. Well, if I'm Iran, I'll keep my eyes on Polymarket, see that there's a spike that he's going to allow the ceasefire to continue, and act accordingly. I mean, all is really troubling. We got just a minute or so left here, Craig. What would you like to see done here? What needs to be done here? And frankly, what are the chances of any of it actually happening in the foreseeable future?
There are two major bills that would address this problem head on. One is by Senator Merkley that would ban essentially all betting on the prediction markets. And the other is by Senator Murphy that would make it very clear any kind of bets on war and politics and by any person that has controls those events or has access to knowledge would be illegal. This type of legislation is necessary because at this point, Chairman Selig of the CFTC has so muddied what this type of activity is. He won't call it gambling, by the way. He calls it like contract sales.
Right.
And that's why he's claiming it's not really betting. And that's should not be subject to gambling laws. So we need further legislation to make it very clear that this is illegal activity. And then we need a full CFTC that'll enforce the law for a change.
Yeah, and this, by the way, and it would have to be signed by the president. Good luck with that.
Yes.
And not to mention, these are, as far as Congress goes, isn't this the same Congress that has had trouble regulating themselves when it comes to insider trading on just regular old stocks for years that they haven't been able to do that?
That's right. I've been working for 5 years to get a law passed to prohibit members of Congress and their spouses from any kind of trading activity on the stock market. And you'd think this is a no-brainer. Common sense legislation. You know, members of Congress are even getting themselves in political trouble by trading on the stock market in fields over businesses that they actually regulate. Yet I can't get Congress to actually recognize it's a problem. And so we still haven't succeeded in passing that legislation.
I think the key phrase there might be no brainer. Craig. Craig Holman is the public citizen government affairs lobbyist at Public Citizen. You can find their important work at citizen.org. You can also find them on the blue skies at Public Citizen. Always a delight speaking with you, Craig. Thank you so much. I look forward to the next time. And good luck with this fight. It is not going to be an easy one, I suspect.
Thank you, Brad. And we'll see. I mean, this is drawing so much international attention. We just might make Congress do the right thing.
You want to bet on it? Thanks, Craig.
Thank you.
Okay. That's it. Let's take a quick break.
Yeah.
And we're back with Green News Report and Desi Doyen. And right after this, I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial. Hey, this is Brad. The Bradcast survives thanks to you and your support. Please stop by bradblog.com/donate today to help us continue to do over your public airwaves what we try to do 5 days a week. That's bradblog.com/donate, and thank you. Got big plans for Earth Day, does it, Doyen?
Just working, as usual.
Doing a show?
Yes.
Slaving away?
Yes.
You're welcome. Let's get to it. Our latest Green News Report.
When do you think it's realistic for Americans to expect that gas will go back to under $3 a gallon?
Economists warn high fuel prices could trip the world into global recession.
This would be devastating to the wilderness.
Senate Republicans vote to strip protections from Minnesota's pristine boundary waters. Plus, Wednesday is Earth Day, celebrating the only planet in the known universe capable of supporting life.
Planet Hollywood?
Planet Earth.
All of those stories and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Gas prices are sky high, but our Secretary of Energy, Chris Wright, is confident that whatever the president is doing is good, even if it isn't.
God bless President Trump's agenda and willingness to pivot. Just because it looks like we're going the wrong direction does not mean that's the direction we're going.
Trump administration summed up in one sentence. This is your Green News Report.
This is why his wife won't drive with him.
Okay, Desi Doyen, I guess this year the news is about nothing but energy. But not in a good way.
No, it is not. As we go to air, Iran has closed the Strait of Hormuz again. Donald Trump has ordered the U.S. military to blockade the strait, and there's no end to the conflict in sight.
Yay!
Trump also threatened again to bomb all of Iran's power plants and bridges, which international law experts say would take out desalination plants, hospitals, and vital civilian infrastructure, likely a war crime. The BBC reported Monday, a senior Iranian parliament member vowed that Iran will never cede control of the Strait of Hormuz. Economists in the Financial Times warned that no matter when the Iran war ends, soaring fuel prices and supply chain disruptions will continue to ripple across the global economy and cause long-term financial strain for U.S. voters. The International Monetary Fund warned that high fuel prices increase the risk of the U.S. and the global economy tipping into recession. The New York Times reports that the Asia-Pacific region has been hit harder and faster by the conflict than officials and experts expected, suffering multiple supply chain bottlenecks, not just shortages of key ingredients to manufacture products, but all plastics, which are made from oil, raising the global cost of plastic products and packaging.
So we're going to be paying for that increased cost as well.
For a long time to come. Here in the U.S., the average price of gas nationally remains above $4 a gallon, according to AAA. Trump Energy Secretary Chris Wright admitted that gas prices could remain high into 2027.
When do you think it's realistic for Americans to expect that gas will go back to under $3 a gallon?
I don't know. That could happen later this year. That might not happen till next year.
Translation, he has no idea.
Yep. And meanwhile, the price of the sun and the wind remains zero. In Congress, late last week, the Republican-controlled U.S. Senate, in an unprecedented move, voted to overturn a ban on copper sulfide mining near Minnesota's pristine Boundary Waters Canoe area, one of the most popular wilderness areas in the country. And Republicans twisted the law to do it. It's a major victory for a Chilean mining company, which will sell the extracted copper to China. Public lands advocate Jim Pattis told the Green News Report the fight is not over yet.
Fortunately, the state of Minnesota has a say in this. Because of the way that surface mineral rights and all kinds of things work, the state of Minnesota still has to grant this mine some permits. And I think the state of Minnesota, they're not going to be doing that.
Yeah, the state of Minnesota is pretty good at pushing back at the federal government.
Monday marked the 16th anniversary of the BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico.
Happy anniversary.
The largest offshore oil spill in world history. BP's Deepwater Horizon oil rig exploded, killing 11 men, sank on Earth Day, and spewed oil for 87 days, with massive impacts on wildlife and the Gulf's fishing and tourism industries. A few weeks ago, the Trump administration undid major Obama-era reforms to offshore oil and gas safety oversight. On Monday, Gulf and environmental groups sued the administration for approving BP's new ultra-deepwater oil drilling project in the Gulf.
I'm sure it'll be fine.
Finally, Wednesday, April 22nd, is the 56th annual Global Earth Day celebration. Launched in 1970 when 20 million Americans took to the streets to protest against unchecked industrial pollution and environmental destruction. This year's theme is Our Power, Our Planet, highlighting how environmental progress is achieved through persistent, sustained action, not just on Earth Day, but every day.
And, of course, every day is Earth Day on the Green News Report.
Yep.
For much more on all of our stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Earth Angel, will you be mine?
Kind of a weird year. To be celebrating Earth Day, isn't it?
Well, listen, the Earth is still going to be here, so why not? Why not go ahead and do our best to do the best that we can with what we have right now to make things better wherever we can for as long as we can?
Bravo. I agree. And at the very least, on Earth Day, do yourself a favor. Go outside, touch grass.
Yes.
As they say. Just touch some grass, wherever it may be, however you want to touch it.
Yes, indeed. It's all about reconnecting with the only planet that we know of that we can survive on, so we should probably try to protect it for ourselves and for other living things. Also, there are going to be lots of community events that go on through the entire month of April, so check with one of your local environmental groups, so their local chapters, because they often have stuff that maybe you didn't know about. And so Earth Day is not just one day, it's an entire month for a lot of communities, so there's plenty to get out there and do, so do it.
Thank you very much, Desi Doyen. Thanks to our guest today, Craig Holman of Public Citizen. Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other that we have done since the beginning of time, they are all available to you for free at bradblog.com. Next time you stop by, we're hoping to have a very new design make all of this much easier for you to do. But next time you stop by, please consider hitting one of those donate buttons to help us stay on your public airwaves. You can also do that by going straight to bradblog.com/donate. Thank you in advance. Drop me an email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. You will find me on the social medias at The Brad Blog, and you'll find Desi Doyen there as well at
Green News Report. Come by and say hi,
there
please.
There you go. That's it. We'll see you at all of the above. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
I'm just a fool.